Hi, this is Ben Domenech, the host of the Federalist Radio Hour. We're a daily show coming to you 5 days a week from Washington, D.C., where we interview our nation's top journalists, politicians, authors, chefs, economists, entertainers, and more. If you're looking for a contrarian discussion on news, politics, or culture, give us a listen and subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on. Welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagus over there.
And it's so good to be in the studio, by the way. The studio feels very, don't you feel at home here?
I hope so, because I never leave. Somehow created some sort of bizarre universe where all I do is do podcast. I literally just had a conversation with Matt Fondelier, and he said, Todd Gurley, Rams running back, Mike August wants to book him for Take a Knee. And I said, okay, good. I'd like to talk to that guy for my motivational podcast you guys can subscribe to. And he said, yeah. It's on a day you already have 6 podcasts.
Ooh, okay,
I said,
good.
Okay, now
what's your record? 8?
Probably 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
It's be careful what you ask for, because all I ever I've told you guys this story before, but I did have a guy, the guy Mark Sweeney, who directed my Acme improv troupe I was in from probably age 27 to age 30 or something. No, sorry. I was in it from maybe 25 to like 29 or 30. But I did a lot of shows, and we had a lot of, like, you know, it was an improv troupe. Like, what we do is we like rehearse on Tuesdays and Thursdays, do a show on Friday and Saturday. And of course, we'd all inevitably end up at some bar or somebody's apartment on Saturday night,
right,
drinking beers and hanging out and doing nothing. And at some point, he just said to me, because back then, you needed to pick a major in comedy. Do you want to do sitcoms? Do you want to be a stand-up? Do you want to do morning radio? Like, you just kind of, now you can just go ahead and just be a humorist. You know, oh, he's got a blog, he's got a podcast, he shows up on the news shows, he makes commentary, sports, or whatever. You have, there's a million comedy jobs. You can do all of them. But back then, it was kind of, do you want to write for a sitcom? You know, you had to kind of do this, you know? And I was the guy who was sort of like the decathlete, but the sports were football, hockey, baseball, and I wasn't really going to dominate any of the sports, or I didn't want to declare a major.
Right.
And he just said, you just need some sort of job where you just sit around and say what you think into a microphone like all day long.
Wow.
And I was like, at the time, I remember thinking, yeah, Mr. Wizard, if you had a magic wand, like, of course, this, he was literally making a weird fantasy job for me to have that didn't exist.
And now here you are.
And now here I am.
Right. Doing that weird fantasy job.
And I'm miserable. So, kids, if you're listening. No, it's weird, because every once in a while I have to stop myself, you know, in the quiet moments and go, hold on, I'm doing exactly what I should be doing.
Right.
And in the past, you would have just gone to work in a coal mine, or maybe you would have worked for your dad's furniture company or something like that, but this didn't exist.
It's kind of like, if you build it, they will come. I have this story that I texted to Gary. Gary, have you called the story up?
I read that story for sure.
Okay. Can you give a brief summary of this? But
sure.
For people who don't remember, there was a sentencing hearing a couple of weeks ago for the
Larry Nassar.
Larry Nassar. And
the doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he got, I don't know, 40 to 175 years. Basically, the judge told him this is your death warrant. So part of the fallout of that is that the – is it Michigan State's chancellor?
Chancellor, and then I don't even know if you've heard this yet, but since you guys have been recording, also their athletic director have gone the way of the dodo and resigned.
Okay.
Or been forced
now,
out.
Adam, you and I have talked about resignations. There are resignations and then there are resignations. Gary, could you summarize her honors resignation package?
Sure thing. Her her golden parachute here. She gets parking for the chancellor of MSU, the president of the college.
Okay.
So she has resigned, and her
– this is Michigan State.
That's correct.
Okay.
So her
– Spartans.
Yep.
Yes.
Spartans.
I think everyone else pictures textbooks or facades of the front of the university. I only picture football teams.
Well,
every single college, every single college is by their football uniform for me.
Okay, what are the colors?
When I was a kid,
Michigan State, green and white.
Yeah, yeah. The Spartans. Yeah, I remember being blown away the first time I found out that Notre Dame was in Indiana. I was like,
that's interesting.
Like,
yeah.
I, as a kid, I was like, what's it doing there? Yeah. I thought it was in the Vatican or something. Like it was weird. It was mind numbing that it was sitting in Indiana. I don't know why. It didn't comport with like my logic, but I didn't know anything about anything other than I didn't know where any colleges were. I just knew their teams.
I couldn't ever figure out how an Armenian football coach got to Indiana to be at Notre Dame. Remember Ara Parsegian.
Forgot. So, all right, sorry.
So as part of her, one would say, some might say, disgraced departure, she will continue getting parking passes on campus for life, free suite tickets to every men's football home game for life. Same with women's basketball game. Option to buy up to 4 men's basketball tickets in the same location as she currently has seats, which, as the chancellor, you would probably
guess
were courtside,
right?
Or adjacent. Parking pass for all other home sporting and cultural events. Reduced price tickets to bowl games and postseason play for football, basketball, and ice hockey. And she has the option to go back into the faculty of MSU. No longer be an administrator, but become faculty. Now, the fun thing about this one is that if she elects to do that, she immediately gets a year off and a 12-month research grant at her current salary, which is $750,000. So she gets a year off to go research and get herself back into the workforce at $750K. Then her first year back on the job, she gets the chancellor's salary of $750K. And then for the next 2 years, she gets 75% of that salary, or $565,000.
Okay. Well, all right.
Now, let's just start.
I
want
to know what she did to step back, but I also want to make this sidebar argument, which is this sort of demonization of businesses,
right,
and this glorification of the college campus,
right,
has to end. I'm so tired of these fat cats where they get their tax breaks. What are they going to do? They're going to get their yacht painted gold. You know, it's like, I don't know. Maybe they're going to open another factory, employ some more people. But I'll tell you what's not going on these college campuses in terms of creating jobs and employment and trickle down and everything. And all we do is go, why is it so expensive? Why is college tuition so expensive? Well, maybe this is part of it.
I read this and I had virtually the exact same reaction, which was, this is called Michigan State University.
Right.
Okay. These are taxpayer funds. This is, I mean, it's a giveaway of monumental proportions.
But when do they become these sacred cows that were listen, if you have any questions about tenure, any questions about salary, or any question about tickets courtside or not, zip it.
Yeah.
We're going to focus on this medium-sized business that's across from the
exactly.
from the college, and we're going to tear it apart.
It's astonishing. I don't even understand it. I don't get it. I mean, that should be the scandal du jour.
When people say, hey, why is college so expensive? And then the thought is, well, why doesn't Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla pay more in taxes so these kids can go to college? I have another solution.
Yeah.
You got way too many people getting paid
way too much
for doing way too little.
Well,
how about that?
If
maybe that would bring the cost down.
I just want to know. I don't understand. If you're being terminated, if you did something that you're going to be terminated for, then why is it we're just doing this money grab and you get to stay at the place at the same time?
I do believe this is what happens when you sort of remove competition. Not to say there's not other colleges, but you're always going to have a line of people trying to get into your bakery if that's your college. Look, you don't really have competition if there's always a waiting list. You know, if you get 10,000 applicants a year and you can only take six, then who cares,
right,
in terms of your business? It's at full capacity all the time. And nobody's really noodling around wanting to know. It's always a pat on the back and you're doing the Lord's work. And every family in the neighborhood is hoping to save away enough and work hard enough to get their young son or daughter to get onto your campus.
Right.
Oh, how long can that go on before people start making their own rules and creating nice soft landing zones for them in case anything goes wrong? And just the idea of tenure and how that works oftentimes. And how can it breed anything else?
Right.
You have a whole bunch of people at work here. Yeah. None of them can be fired.
Right.
Okay. You tell me how that's going
to
work.
Right. Well, that's the, I hate to say it, it's civil service, the DA's office, I mean, or the PD's office.
Yeah, just start doing whatever they want, whenever they want.
You can't do anything about it. How do you run a firm where everybody's just there with tenure? I mean, or they're there with civil service protection, or they're there with, I mean, I understand certain things. There should be rules. I'm a guy to always, you know, there should be due process, things like that. I made a whole career on that. But at the same time, I don't understand. You get inside and you just keep your head down long enough and then you've got a life job. You got a job for life.
My feeling is this, you know, when people say, hey, you know, a lot of these government folks have, you know, 401ks and these retirement funds and like multiple retirement stuff. And then people go, hey, the guy's a fireman. You know, why shouldn't he have, or she works at the DMV. Why shouldn't? Okay, fine. But I don't have one. I just have whatever money I save for my retirement. I don't have some magical fund that's going to take care of me.
Well, I got another one for you. If by the way, if you have to do payroll on the first coming up, and there's not enough revenue, does it just get paid anyway? I mean, I never understood this.
I'm saying, like, it's a weird thing because this sort of zero-gravity world that they live in does not resemble the gravity we live in.
Exactly. I don't even understand. It's like, what universe you in? I can't tell you the number of times I walk into a courtroom and some guy will say something idiotic to me. I'll just say, in terms of that, well, I can't do this. I can't do that. And you just say, why are you here? Why are you occupying space? You make no decision. You don't do anything. You haven't, all you're trying to do is avoid getting written up for this, that, or the other thing when you're in one of these bureaucracies or you work for the county or you work for the state. How is that real? How does that resemble anything in the world where you either make it or you don't?
Well, two things. One is, people go, oh, yeah, you have tenure. Yeah, well, and then they go on to describe, well, these people work here. They put in a number of years. They're dedicated. Yeah. So are guys who work at factories that close down, like, right, all the time. There's no employment guarantees in the real world.
Well, also, why is it unilateral? Why is it that you get tenure, so I can't get rid of you, but if you want to flee and go somewhere else, you can do it?
Right.
Does that make sense?
What did this woman do, or what do they claim she did?
Hold on. Before Gary does that, let me, speaking of legal, mm-hmm, now that the New Year's madness is over, mm-hmm, it's time to work on your story for 2018. I love that. Make this year the year you finally get serious about launching and running your own business. Wow, how appropriate that we were just having this discussion. Mm-hmm. Or rest easier knowing your family's future is squared away with the right estate plan. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but they have resources to keep you on the right path, including advice from their network of independent attorneys. Take your business to the next level or take control of your family's future with LegalZoom. Start writing your 2018 story with LegalZoom right now. Now, when they say take care of your family's future, they're talking about their estate planning stuff, which I know for a fact they do very well because of my brother-in-law Paul's over there. And when they're saying take your business to the next level, there's a bunch of stuff you need to know given the new tax reform that you can go on there immediately and they can guide you through. So I would say, Gary, what do you think?
I think that you should go to LegalZoom.com/doubt to get special savings. That's LegalZoom.com/doubt. LegalZoom, where life meets legal. LegalZoom.com/doubt.
So, Gary, what do you know, or Mark, what do you know about why she resigned, and then why did the athletic director resign?
So, aside from being a USA Olympics gymnastic coach, Larry Nassar was also working for Michigan State University and conducting treatment on Olympic team members at a facility that was located on the Michigan State campus. Mm-hmm. So, as a result of Larry's trial and all of his misdeeds, the, as Mark noted, government-funded, taxpayer-funded Michigan State University came under a lot of stress and pressure from the press and otherwise because he was associated with this university. So I think that the reason that the president and then the athletic director stepped down was sort of a straight line up from Larry Nassar to who should have been on top of this and who should have been protecting these girls. And the infrastructure above him is just sort of crumbling so they can install people who weren't around when these atrocities were happening.
And that's why the athletic director went.
Yes, that
as
is
well.
The best of my understanding.
Now, see, I this is my feeling on this. If they knew something and they didn't do anything, and this would kind of go to the Sandusky Penn State.
Right.
Joe Pa. So if they can say that this woman or the athletic director knew something, turned a blind eye, didn't do anything, hold them accountable. And why do you give them this incredible golden parachute? If they didn't know anything and they're sacrificial lambs, then why are you succumbing to public pressure where there is no basis upon which? So I think it's kind of binary. I don't say, oh, we're just going to – it seems to me to be another betrayal to the public, especially the Michigan State taxpayers, if you're just – saying, okay, we're going to get rid of the chancellor and we're going to give her just so everybody feels good. I mean, that to me, unless she did something, then you shouldn't do that.
Well, I didn't have this happen in my life, thankfully, but I had a sort of version. It's the only time I ever got paid to stay home. And it was pretty glorious. As a Corolla, I've been fighting my whole life to get paid to stay home.
Oh, right,
like
right.
I could remember, and I remember I got suspended in high school and was elated about it. And I could remember, now this is provided you don't care if you go to college or what your record looks like or have any standing with your parents or faculty or anything. If all those are zero, then go home. Take a few days off, watch a little daytime TV. So when I lost my radio job, I had...
How many years ago was that?
That would have been in 2009. That would have been February 2009.
Wow.
So I lost my radio job, and it was a real jerk-off they did with me, which I didn't... People that get mad at business, I never really understand it. Because to me, they want to make money. They have a thought about making money. Sometimes it involves you.
Right.
And I don't know why you'd ever take it personally. I got jerked around royally, and I never took it personally because I'm just assuming that they want to make money, and this is how they think they're going to make money. They right. may be wrong.
They may be stupid.
I may have got jerked around, but it doesn't matter. They came to me, and they said... we're going to fold the whole thing up, and everyone's going. But you have the option of going to New York and actually going to a bigger market and having essentially a raise. Like we didn't really discuss money, but you're going to get a promotion, and everyone else is going to hit the streets, was kind of what they said to me. And then they said, now don't say anything. You can't say anything. So I said, okay. And I was saying, you know, we had twins, young Sonny and Italia were a year and a half or something. And then we had a big house we just finished, and there's a Lynette and everything. And I was like saying, I don't know, maybe I'll go to New York and then I'll just come back every other weekend or something. Maybe we'll all move to New York. Maybe I'll go to New York for a year and then we'll move to New York. I don't know. But I like my cars. What about my cars?
Yeah, you're not going to have your cars in New York.
Put salt on the road. Uh-huh. So I'm thinking about all this stuff, and I have to go into work, and I know they're going to pull the plug like February 18th or something like that. And I'm showing up to work, and no one else knows what's going on. And I got my producer going. I remember very vividly, she's going, I think this year for March Madness, we go to Vegas. Uh-huh. We cut a deal with a casino. We do a live show, like, you know, I don't know, middle of March at Caesars. And then I'm going, hold off on that. It's just going, well, we got to get planning. You know, if we're going to do it, we got to get planning. Well, don't call Caesars.
Yet. Quite yet.
Don't call them yet. She's like, well, how are we going to plan? I'm like, just cool your jets. It's a good idea. Uh-huh. Don't do anything.
Yeah. Just so, keep that under your hat.
Yeah. So, and now, at that time, we were pretty much number one in all our affiliate markets.
Right.
We had...
You were in how many markets at that point? I used to know all of this.
We had about 13 or something like that. But we had some good markets like Seattle and Vegas and stuff like that. We were number one in Seattle and number one in Vegas and all kinds of stuff. And we're finally getting some traction in L.A., because I got a bonus for the first time in 3 years from ratings in L.A. We're fifth or third or something like that. But it made it into the bonus.
KLSX, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they said, well, look, it's all going to go away, but you may go to New York and get a bump. I remember thinking, God, I don't want to go to New York, but okay, but I won't say anything. And then it came time to say something. And it was either right before I said something or right after I said something, they went, oh, hey, by the way, the whole New York thing's off the table.
Well, thanks
so
a lot.
You're going to hit the sidewalk, too. Okay. So I said, all right. But the good news was I was going to get paid for another like 9.5 months.
No kidding.
And I was elated
over
that.
It was like winning the lottery.
First off, when your alarm goes off at 4:45 every morning... That's lottery plus.
Exactly.
Like not only am I getting paid to stay home, but I'm going to sleep till noon. I'm going to walk around like Howard Hughes. I'm going to use Kleenex boxes for slippers. I'm going to walk around all day. Throw a beard down to the ground. You know. Now, the problem with that is it's hard to enjoy it because you're on the clock.
Right.
Which is basically, for me, it was... Podcasting doesn't really exist as anything more like it exists like ham radio exists.
Right.
Like, you can do it if you want, but you're not going to get paid. Go down to your basement and talk to your friend in the Soviet Union. You know, you're not going to get any money. So that no one gets paid to do podcasting. The economy's tanking.
Right. That was right smack dab in the middle of a meltdown.
The economy's tanking. And there are no more radio jobs,
yeah.
Which is kind of your job.
Right.
So, but enjoy getting paid for 9 months and 3 weeks and enjoy staring at your newborn twins.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to be thinking during this period of time, what shall I do when we get to the end? And so I was able, but it was the only time I got my walking papers and still hammered the checks. And there was a part of me that was pretty excited about that.
But I'll bet you that probably was the – at the same time were you a little afraid? Because when you have kids that age and there is a little bit of anxiety. It's like, you know, I'm here. I got to take care of them. Where's the next check coming from?
You know, to be utterly honest, no. But I don't – well, here's the thing. I grew up – in a shack with a mom who got welfare and food stamps, and I just sort of ate at other people's houses, and then it just ran around the street all day, just playing ditch and throwing a football at people and stuff like that. And I'm very aware of the fact that kids can literally just be raised with nothing. Like, I mean, yeah, you have to provide some top ramen for them, you know? Like, I mean, and a can of corn. Like, I mean... All the space camps and all the, hey, we're going to Maui for the winter and stuff like that. That's a whole bunch of stuff that never existed in my world. And me and my friends ended up not to be malnourished and seem to have some faculties and speak the English language. And sure, we all ended up on a construction site with a shovel in our hand, or we'd alternate between the broom and the shovel when we were 19. But everyone was able-bodied and at some point was able to move on with their life. Like, I had this notion of, if my parents can raise kids, anybody can raise kids, because they didn't raise us. They just sort of hung out, and then I went somewhere else and slept over and had dinner. You know, that was so I wasn't worried about them, but what I was worried about was I just finished this big house on the hill. I have this lifestyle. This is going to sound horrible. I always knew I'd be able to provide, you know, for the family, but I'd gotten sort of accustomed to this.
Right.
And well, there's going to be some downsizing in my future.
Right. When that circle expands, it's always hard to bring it back.
Yeah. We got a lot of loose skin after you bring it back.
Exactly right. It's exactly right. And no matter what you do, you keep that circle keeps expanding, and you just can't do anything.
No, I tell people, and we'll lean a little toward the philosophical on this episode of Reasonable Doubt. Stepping backwards, it's the hardest, most humbling thing to do. It's not, look, you make $2 million a year, and the next year you make $1 million a year. Obviously, if you made 500 grand 1 year and then $1 million the next year, you'd be over the moon.
Right.
So it's not the million, it's the stepping back. That hurts. That stings. I've had to go through it a couple of times, and it doesn't feel good. But the question is sort of, do you get up? Do you dust yourself off? Whatever it is. But I was staring down the barrel of, I always thought that if I got fired from a radio job, it just because I made fun of the Asians one too many times, and they finally, somebody had enough, and they pulled the plug, which would be fine. I would then go across the street to the other radio station and get a job there. I didn't envision a scenario where the entire business of radio went away while I was on the air, where somebody just basically said, there's no more business model for you guys anymore.
Right.
We're just going to hire a computer. They're going to play a playlist, and the computer will be free.
Right.
That we're not going to pay you hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to yak into a mic. We'll just play the music. Nobody cares.
Nobody gives a shit. I know. It's right. Well, music, the radio and music has had a once in a lifetime change or modification in the last 10 years.
I didn't know it was going to, I didn't envision that scenario, because the radio had always been so robust.
Especially here in Southern California. I mean, was like the fabric of our youth. I mean, you know.
And people got paid. I mean, you people listening, depending on, you know, where you're listening, the size of the market, but what these morning show guys would get paid was not, I mean, it was millions of dollars. Like, right. You have no idea. Like, I mean,
the morning radio wars here were like something, while we were growing up, was unbelievable.
And eventually, people started getting paid. And when they got paid, they really got paid.
Yeah. And, well, Rick Dees, for a while, was making ungodly sums.
Oh, I remember sitting around with Jimmy, and it's like, we're producing 23 episodes of The Man Show every year.
Right.
I'm doing Love Line on MTV. He's doing like Win Ben Stein's Money. It's like Mark and Brian from Mark and Brian in the Morning on KLSX. Each one of them's making five times what we make with our five TV shows.
Exactly.
Now, I think history's worked out for Kimmel and maybe myself, but...
Well, I would say that, yes, history has worked out for the two of you.
But for the time, I was not getting paid. And I remember thinking, and almost being relieved, but I remember thinking, and I could never figure this out. I never asked. I didn't want to ask. I don't want to get anyone to think it was a good idea. But I was like, we're number one in Seattle. We're number one in Vegas. I always remember those two, because I used to say to my program director, who never was a fan of mine, I'd go, smartest city in the world, Seattle.
Seattle.
Number one.
Number one.
Dumbest city in the world, Vegas, number one. You know anyone else got that kind of range? Who doesn't fall in between dumbest and smartest?
Exactly.
You don't think Portland lands somewhere between dumbest and smartest? right. So he didn't care. So
did you ever find out the backstory of why no New York? Did they put somebody else there? Or they just go in a completely different direction. I'm curious about that because I could see where in New York you would have been huge.
You know, Mark, a little glimpse at my wiring, and as previously discussed, when businesses make decisions that involve me, I don't take it personally. I don't ask. I don't make proclamations like, you know, you're gonna
regret
you're gonna
day.
Regret
you're
this.
You're gonna rue the day.
This
you
building
got
shan't see my shadow. Yeah. No, I just you know, it's insane. If you want to know how I am, it's insane that they were talking about this New York job, this sort of this unicorn of this Pegasus of this New York job, this New York job with me for months. And at some point, maybe I got a call from my agent or something, and it's like, New York's not on the table anymore. Oh. And I said, oh. And then I just moved on. Like, I didn't say, what do you mean not on the table, or get them on the phone, or I need an explanation, or I talked to my wife about this already, and we were looking at apartments. And I say nothing other than it's off the table, it's off the table. Like, that's, they don't want to do it. Or they refuse to do it, or they can't do it. Like for me, it's always turn the page as fast as I possibly can. It's like hearing a dish break at a restaurant behind me. I'm not going to turn around. I know what it is. Where I'm moving on to my meal.
When did Podcast One come about? What year was that? Because Norm was in huge in terrestrial radio.
Well, Norm the thing that's funny about Norm Pattis is Norm Pattis invented Westwood One.
Right.
And it's called Westwood One because he had one office in Westwood when he invented it. Now, when I showed up at Westwood One, Loveline was syndicated through Westwood One.
Right.
And I used to the studio was so decrepit and shabby and broken down. I refuse to call it Westwood One. I would either call it Westwood Two or Westwood None is what I used to call it all the time. And I used to curse it all the time because we wouldn't get us chairs. It's like the chairs. I remember such a weirdo that radio is a weird world. I was just in Dennis Prager's studio yesterday and I said, and this is a week ago, if you hear this, I said, they gave me a set of headphones. The headphones looked like they'd been dipped in acid and like rolled in kitty litter. Like that they're like, not only is the leather ear part bad, it's exploded in the sun, you know. You'll oftentimes see the headphones broken and put back together with not duct tape, but clear packing tape. And they, you know, it's got the weird joint in it and stuff. The chairs always have holes all over the arms and you know, there's duct tape around them and they squeak and they fall forward in the back. And it's like, here's a business where really all you need is a chair and a headphone.
Right.
But you also have to go in with the understanding that between every 5 and 8 years, you must go down to a Circuit City and you must go down to Office Depot and you must purchase a chair and a new set of headphones, but only every 8 years.
Yes, right. Which we don't think is that much of an expenditure.
Off the table.
Yeah.
Off the table. One of the gifts Jimmy bought me was a set of nice headphones. Wow. And in radio, it's not like you show up and there's nice headphones. You have your own, you put your name on it, and you lock them away. Because if you just left them out or put them on your locker that was open, your cubbyhole, or whatever, they'd be gone. It's like radio's a weird world. And Westwood None, or Westwood 2, I was like, can we get some goddamn chairs in this place? Like, because the guests would sit down, you'd hear it squeaking, it would fall forward, you know, the guy's head would hit the microphone and stuff. I go, finally, a listener from Minnesota, where we're syndicated, got so tired of me complaining, and they work for an office furniture manufacturer. They sent us over, like, three beautiful chairs.
Wow.
And I remember when I left, I was like, I'm taking the chairs. And they were like, those are our chairs. And I go, you goddamn know they are not. You assholes wouldn't do anything for a year of complaining. Finally, a guy in Minneapolis got so tired of me complaining that he actually sent over chairs. And I said, look, I'll tell you what, I'm reasonable. I'll make you a deal. Either the chairs come with me or we both watch me set them on fire in the parking lot. But I'm not leaving these chairs for you assholes who never got chairs. So they let me take the chairs. But here's what I never could figure out. I never could figure out why CBS Radio, when I was under contract with them, and I was number one in all these markets, or the top two or three in all these markets, but they pulled the plug on KLSX in Los Angeles. The Seattle station, the Vegas station, still wanted me to broadcast.
Right.
You know,
well, obviously.
Why didn't they go, you're coming to work every day, you're still getting paid, you talking to the mic, and no one in LA hears you.
Right.
But everyone in Seattle hears you. And Portland and Vegas. So
why don't get that.
I never
at all.
Figured that one out. But again, just like never asking what happened in New York, I never asked what happened with that. And as you bring it up, there's a part of me that's a little curious. Like, hey, what happened in New York? Or what were they talking about?
I want to investigate this
scenario? But the way I'm wired is like they said no.
You got kids,
you got a house, you got a mortgage, you got cars, you got a habit, and you got to move on. And if they get a hold of me and say it's yes, then that'll be a different conversation.
Wow.
I don't know. What percentage of people would want to know what went on in New York?
I think a high percentage. I think if you're curious, you'd want to know. You'd ask. Except you're always so forward focused that you don't want to do an autopsy, so to speak. I have that in me that I'd want to do the autopsy only to see if there was something that I understood that they didn't understand, or they understood something that I didn't understand. The intellectual challenge would make me extremely curious about that.
That's probably the Armenian in you.
Yeah, it probably is the Armo in me. There's an Armo part of the DNA that would just want to know that.
Well, I think both our wiring is correct. Turn the page and not cry over spilt milk is probably good. But on the other hand, maybe there was a misunderstanding. Maybe there was something that you needed to inform them of that you could have done through a dialogue. I just never...
You have the same agent now that you had then?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to question your agent. Find out and see what he has to say. How soon after that did you hook up with Gary? Because Gary's about 9 years, right?
I was about 10 months later.
Really?
No.
Right. Yeah. As soon as his pay stopped, then you came in.
Pretty much.
As soon as he stopped getting paid, then you appeared.
Yeah, because I discovered the podcast a few months into its iteration, and I first met the gentleman who hired me in December when Adam did his first ever live podcast at Irvine. And then it took about 3 or 4 months of me pestering that person before I finally got in the door.
Well, how did you get in the door? Did you work? You offer to work for free?
Sure did.
Yeah,
for a year.
That's the way to do it.
It's the only way to do it.
Walked up to somebody at a live show with a resume. Well, I walked up and said I want to work for free, and he said, "Here's an email address. Send me a resume." And I pulled one out of my breast pocket, and he said, "Okay, that was a fake email address. Here's a real email address." And that was how I got in.
So funny. That's so funny. You know, I'll tell what he probably will get mad at me for telling this, but for Jake. Jake finished with my son, who finished with the International Culinary Institute. After he'd went to college, he just still didn't know what he wanted to do. And then he fell into this thing where he decided he wanted to be a chef. So he went to ICE in New York and graduated from there and did not want to.
What's ICE?
ICE is International Culinary Institute.
That
or
makes
something.
Sense. All right.
And so wanted to find a job on his own and was sending around resumes. And I said, "Jake, you're never going to get a fucking job if you're sending around resumes. You got to go in there. You got to present yourself. And you got to tell them I'll work for free." Basically what Gary did. I said, "Otherwise, it's just not going to work." And I said, "To give you an added motivation, you're in New York right now." This is back in November. I said, "If you don't have a job by Christmas, I'm sending you home to live with your mother." And so... He went around, to his credit, walked into a place, told me he worked for free, gave him the whole spiel. They gave him a shot, and he's now working at a Michelin one-star restaurant in New York, and they love him. And he's kind of rid up the already been promoted a time or two and is doing great, loves his job. It's walking distance from where he lives. I don't know whether it was the advice to – work for free or offer it as an intern. They have something in the chef world where you trail is what they call it. You go behind a great chef. or whether it was the threat of living with Paulette. But one or the other motivated him. I don't know what it was.
Well, I'm sure it was both. I mean, that's not a comedic answer, but people can motivate, you know, they can be incentivized and they can be scared. Like, I, you know, you can tell a kid, don't do it. You're going to get spanked, or don't do it. I'll give you a lollipop. They both work.
Right.
You know,
I know. It's the carrot, the carrot and the stick. So it's interesting. So how many other guys that work for you now started off as interns?
I think Gary's got probably has a better answer for that.
Matt worked for free for a little bit. I believe Chris as well. Kaylin started as an intern. There's a Chris over at the other shop is still currently an intern.
Yeah. He's moving to Atlanta.
Oh, is he? He's moving back?
Yeah, he just told me he's there for like, he said, I'm going to Atlanta and I'm hired on a TV production of like, That Ain't My Baby or something like that. I said, so you're going to leave all the nice white people to go to a place and just have black people scream at each other? And he said, pretty much.
Wait, don't I know his family, that guy?
Don't think so.
You sure? Doesn't he have a court reporter somewhere in the mix?
No.
He, look, you know, the thing that is a little more interesting, doesn't nullify this, but it's a little more, it adds a wrinkle in the podcast business versus the restaurant business. If Jake went in to work for free for a restaurant and that restaurant hadn't formally made a penny and no restaurant before it ever made a penny,
right,
then it's a little different situation because it's like, yeah, anyone who wants to work here can work for free because I'm working for free.
Exactly. Too. I don't even know what it is I'm doing.
I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm not getting paid either. So we got to figure this out. So it's a little – now, obviously, it's a different climate, but – when people showed up, nobody got paid.
Right.
So it wasn't it was a sort of a thing where it's like you're almost not taking advantage of the little guy because the big guy doesn't have a corner office and any kind of parachute.
Just starting something that was, look what has happened in less than 10 years of this. I mean, it's been a sea change. Podcasting.
Yeah. It's, and, you know, whenever anyone wants to know, you know, what's, how'd you know? Or nobody knows anything. I don't
know.
And, you know as
you
much.
You couldn't have foreseen this.
But also, it's like, you know, what does Jake know? I just saw him cooking away on Christmas time in your palatial kitchen. Tastefully done.
He did very well.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is Jake, X amount of months ago, knew a lot less than he knows now. Now he knows he's in.
Right.
But he doesn't know if he's going to have a chain of restaurants or a line of frozen food with his name on it.
Exactly. He has no idea. But he's a
tummy by Jake.
Yeah, I told him, look, you've got a great opportunity. I don't know how you did it. Somehow you landed at a Michelin star restaurant. Learn your craft. That's exactly what he wants to do. I mean, he loves the idea of just learning his craft, learning every station, learning the thing. I mean, it's just you and I have talked about this a zillion times. You got to do the 10,000 hours, basically, the idea of repeating it, of learning, of sucking it up, and sucking it up in the sense of learning everything you can about it, being curious and having the drive to understand it.
Well, and let me address this because I was sort of thinking about it, which is, so here are the scenarios. So Jake is how old?
24.
24. Okay. So when I was 24, if I wanted to change careers, I didn't really have the luxury of going somewhere and being an apprentice or intern.
Right.
Because my dad's not Mark Garagos.
Right.
Jim Carolla had no money to throw around, and Chris Carolla had no, or whatever her last name is, they had no anything and no intention of it either. So right. I had this sort of thing where I did want to learn improv. I did want to learn comedy. I did want to do whatever, but I couldn't walk around and go to the improv and say, I'll intern here for free because I had bills to pay.
Right.
So I
had you didn't have a MacArthur grant for a genius grant to go study your craft.
Did not. So I, work construction during the day. And then at night, I went out and did open mics and, you know, groundlings classes, and that's what nights and weekends were for. So I couldn't go a direct full-time route with it. I had to make it a weekend evening thing. You'd be surprised on how much you can get done if you're just taking weekend classes and Tuesday night and Thursday night groundling classes. But then also later on, now I'm at this point in my, you know, early 40s, I had got myself up to the position where I was going to get paid for the rest of the year, and I could take off that 10 months and focus full time on something that didn't pay. Not because I had a fairy godfather, but because I created this fairy godfather for myself that wasn't an indefinite period of time, but through.
But I'd love to let you percolate.
Right. So yeah. If you'd like to do this stuff and you go, well, hey, not everyone is the son of Mark Gargis. Well, you go, okay. So you either start carving out weekends and holidays, or you put your nose to the grindstone for the next 5 years, get something put away, whatever, through lifestyle, through work, through savings, through whatever, and then go, now I'm going to take a year off and focus on this other career that I formerly couldn't.
That's one of the great things about America. I mean, that's amazing. You can literally do anything. I've got a lawyer who works for me who I admire greatly. He's a young man. He's probably 26 or 27. I won't embarrass him by his name, but he's not only a pilot and a lawyer and a very talented young lawyer, but he's decided now he wants to go to medical school. So I gave him kind of a sabbatical for 3 months to study for the MCATs because he wants to do that as well. I love it when people want to do that, when they just want to achieve some dream. I think it's just the greatest.
I will tell you a story about a guy who's a pilot and a doctor and a comedy writer, and I'll use his name and embarrass him in a moment.
Please do.
First, I'll tell you about the ZipRecruiter. Speaking of jobs,
right.
You hiring, huh? Posting your open position to job sites, just waiting for the right people to come in. You don't want to do that. ZipRecruiter, they know what you're looking for. They'll let you and them know how to identify people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. In fact, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. So we all know you're not going to get a Gary or a Jake Gargis walking through your door. You got to go out and beat the bushes a little. Let ZipRecruiter do that for you. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. Try it out. If you're looking for a job, use them. If you're looking for an employee, use them. ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. ZipRecruiter.com/doubt. Do it for free. ZipRecruiter, it's the smart way to hire. There's a guy I love named Jake Lentz.
Lentz. L-E-N-T-Z?
Something like that.
Okay.
I'm not a speller. He's from Minnesota.
And, a lot of Minnesota action for
I
you,
know.
Huh?
It seems I like folks from Minnesota. It's Lentz, huh? Jake. Jake, I always like the guy because nothing like a regular dude.
Right.
I love a dude, you know. Not a douchey dude, but a regular dude.
Exactly. Down
and
to earth.
I met him when I was writing Jimmy Kimmel Live for the first season or the second season, whenever Jake showed up. And writing for a late night show is, it's kind of a gilded cage. It's like, it's a great job, but it's a little too good.
Right.
And it's a little too easy, and it's a little too comfortable.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
What I used to say about waiting tables and going to law school. I always said the toughest thing in the world was when you're making really good money waiting tables, it's like, really? Do I want to go do this law school thing? I get it.
I had a stripper girlfriend once, and the same things apply. When I said, why don't you be a receptionist or secretary? She's like,
I kind of like the tips. I like the tips.
So I, just the tips, you'd say.
Yeah.
So I didn't have this because my misery index on the construction site was so high that I always was dying to go somewhere
else.
I'm
so surprised that you always went construction because you would have been great in a service job like a waiting tables, because waiting tables, your tips are, you know, are you entertaining the people? Are you giving them the service?
You know, it's a weird thing. And now you got to make me a note, Gary, that says Jake Lentz, because my problem with Mark. We got to you know what happened? I've never thought about this, but it's true. When I was 16, I went and applied at the Taco Bell across from the high school on Magnolia and Colfax, and they said no. They read my chicken scratching on their application. They probably couldn't read it. You know, they're like, what is this? No, we're not hiring this insane person, or he has a palsy or something. So I then made my way over to the McDonald's on Ventura Boulevard in Studio City. And I just said, I will fill out. And they said, yeah, we'll hire you. And I said, okay. And I was kind of, spoke good English, fairly tall, outgoing. I had a sense of humor. I like to talk to people and stuff like that.
I mean, you're the perfect service guy.
And I got there and they're like, here's your spatula. Here's your smock. Go stand behind the grill. And I remember the time kind of thinking, how come I'm not up front where this cash register is like greeting people and telling them about our specials?
Right.
And that grill, it's just, you just stand there and just sweat. You hold frozen patties, like six in each hand, and you press the timer and you sear them and your cuticles smell like onions. And then when I was done grilling, the only time I would stop grilling is when they needed a sweep and a mop.
Every two hours it would slow
down. They'd go, all right, sweeping a mop in the dining area. And I'd get out there with the broom and the mop. And I that's all I did. I never talked to anybody. I didn't interact with anybody.
See, that manager should have put you out on front. You would have been very entertaining on the front lines.
And I sort of got it in my head that I guess I was the grill guy, not the front guy, And it was never discussed. I never had any conversation with my parents or faculty or counselors or anything. They went like, wait a minute, you're a register guy. You're not a grill guy. They're like, yeah, you're a grill guy. That's where they put you. So I think they know what they're doing. So I just went about my life as a grill guy, just working on construction sites with illegals, like not talking to anybody or anything. But there was one time. But I always had that. I had friends that were bartenders and stuff, and they make good cash and good tips.
It was unbelievable.
Phone numbers from girls and stuff. Yeah. And I was just on these construction sites, So I was like,
my biggest fear was, I remember when I was in college waiting tables, it was just, really, I'm going to, you could make literally back then, this is the 70s, you can make, $500 to $1,000 on a weekend. It
drives me insane.
Cash.
Drives me insane because I'm driving a truck with a bed box and a lumber rack. I got tools. I could read plans stuff. And these guys are shaking their ass and getting themselves walking around with a handful of cash and phone numbers and drinks afterward and food. Oh, it made me a steak when we were done. I hated it. It drove me nuts. I had a guy, his name was Ron Braun. He was a gay fella that I used to work for. At a certain point, I would just built a lot of custom furniture for this guy and did a lot of custom stuff. And I was getting like clients that were a little higher end, and he had a restaurant called Muse in the west, on the west side.
Right.
And it was a really cool upscale restaurant.
Right.
And like at some point, I remember saying to him, like, Ron, could I be like the bar back or something? Could I just like stand there, refill bottles for the guy or hand him ice or something, Cause it was tons of hot chicks, tons of tipping, real upscale,
probably a tip pool. So
whatever. And we came close a few times and I showed up during the day a few times and met with the bar manager. Never happened. It just never. And then he passed away. So it was very sad, and I think the business went on and everything else. So that was as close as I got. Now, Jake Lentz said to me when the writer's room, you get a big lunch every day. You sit around, you shoot the shit. You got to do work, but it's easy to fall into a pretty good schedule.
You start telling jokes. You're having fun. I've been in a couple of writers' rooms. It's very entertaining.
I loved it. I had a great time. And Jake said to me, I think I'm going to be a doctor. And I said, really? Like it's like a emergency medicine physician, And I said, you're young. You got a great job here. You got a great salary. You're writing jokes. Now you have to like quit and go back to school full time. It's going to take years and years and years. And he's like, yeah, but that's what I want to do. And I said, okay. And then I quit. I didn't quit. I moved on to whatever job. And Jake, I would see periodically, you know, and I always loved him. He's like, I'm in school, you know. And, okay, following through. And the other day, he showed up at my shop to watch football on Sunday. He was wearing a full, helicopter pilot uniform.
No shit.
And he's on, like, the medevac team. And he's the physician who's in the chopper for the medevac team.
Wow.
And he's also working at the county, well, not county USC, but USC, whatever.
UCLA.
Sorry. Go Bruins. It's a full-time doctor.
It's amazing.
Said, I'm going to do it. Yeah. Now, if any of my jack-off friends from North Hollywood announced, I'm going to do this, I would tell them you're high. Because I know you'd never do it. That's just going to mean you're going to go to Pierce Junior College for 7 years and get high before you have to come back to work. But he's a doctor.
And he did it.
And time passes quickly. He's doing what he wants to do.
I love it.
That's great. All right, let's go out on a high
positive
note. All right, coming up this Friday, Kennedy Center, Washington, D.C. That'll be me this Friday. Also, March 2nd, Thunder Valley Casino. That is stand-up. And then you just go to adamcarolla.com for the live shows and the various shows and the basic cable commentary and all that. Go to Chassis, get all the movies. And say hi to Lynette over at Corolla Drinks. We've got a lot of really good product over there. What do you got, Mark Garagus?
You know, I'm gonna say one thing. This week, I am in Miami, and I'm going to be inducted into the Trial Lawyers Hall of Fame while I'm still alive.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I'm very excited about that. It'll be this coming Tuesday, I think. And that's what's I only wish the old man was here to see it, but I have a feeling he knows it.
Now, I like that. I like that you're proud, and you're proud of him, and he's proud of you in heaven. Do they do what they do in all other sort of ceremonies of this nature where you get like Corbin Burnson, like the lawyer from TV, to be the MC?
Actually, I think they've got A-Rod, which I can't quite figure out, but I may sneak in one of my current clients to do the intro. And so we'll see. I'll let you know if it happens.
Chris Brown?
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
I couldn't be happier, especially because I'm alive. You know, the other three guys who are coming in are passed away. So
one client comes to mind who may not really have many work conflicts at the moment. I don't know.
And it is Super Bowl weekend. So
just saying.
I know. I got it.
So until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garagus saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.